The Seductive Language Black Book, Module 7, with Dr. Steve G. Jones. Number 16, on the same ground. As we've discussed in an earlier part of this book, one of the key elements of influence in general is establishing commonality or similarity with your subject. Finding common ground with one's subject is often neglected by many influencers and seducers because they become preoccupied with establishing dominance in the relationship. While it's true that you have to lead your subject using your central intention, you also have to ensure that the subject doesn't see you as a potential threat in any way. Here are some linguistic strategies that will help you achieve common ground with your subject. 1. Don't assume, clarify. One of our normal cognitive functions is to make assumptions about people and the situations that we find ourselves in. While it's certainly easy to make assumptions, it doesn't mean that your assumptions are particularly helpful in seducing others. I'm not saying that you shouldn't make assumptions ever again. What I am saying here is that before you can make any assumptions about another person, you have to make sure that you know enough about your subject. A reliable assumption can only be made after eliciting sufficient feedback from your subject. Your knowledge of your subject is of paramount importance in this situation. If you don't know your subject well enough, you're bound to make a lot of mistakes or errors when making assumptions. What complicates this situation is that seducers often take action after making an assumption about their subjects. If you end up taking action after making an inaccurate assumption, you're bound to generate the wrong kind of reaction in your subject. Since the foundation of seduction is the responses that we are able to elicit from our subjects, it only makes sense that we become very guarded about what kinds of responses we trigger. This applies most especially to situations in which the subject is exposed to linguistic devices and actions that can trigger powerful raw emotions. A seducer can easily make mistakes in the following areas: what the subject thinks, what the subject believes in as a person, what the subject wants or desires, what the subject knows about the topic at hand. It's imperative that everything you say and do is based on feedback and proof from your own interactions with the subject. If you receive information from other people regarding your subject, acknowledge it, but don't act based solely on external information. Find out for yourself. Even if the effort is more difficult in the beginning, the information that you get from your subject can be used in the future. 2, tone down your arrogance. Confidence and arrogance are two different things, distinct from each other. An arrogant person may lack true confidence, while a confident person can become arrogant in certain situations. When a seducer becomes arrogant toward their subject, they automatically close off the channels of communication needed to make the engagement work. An arrogant seducer will believe that their techniques are effective regardless of the subject's actual responses. This is simply disastrous if you want to achieve the best results in the shortest period of time. As I've repeatedly said throughout this book, the best measurement of your effectiveness as a seducer is the actual response that you're getting. Even if you know dozens of seduction and influence techniques, your subject's perception of you and their actual responses are still more important than what you think is working. Being arrogant also means that you're not interested in knowing what your subject wants or thinks or feels about the interaction. Another interesting trait of the arrogant seducer is that they believe that people are somehow inferior and that they should be acquiescing to the seducer. Let's take apart the two prior points so that you will know how they can injure your overall seduction efforts. First of all, if you're not interested in knowing what your subject is thinking or feeling at all, or this is your last priority, then there's no way that you will be able to practice seduction or influence, for obvious reasons. The second point is actually a dangerous weakness for seducers because it can fundamentally change how you perceive and communicate with your subject. If you assume that you are essentially superior to your subject, you will become careless with your words and actions. And the end point of this weakness is that you'll end up committing a mistake that would make the subject reject the seduction altogether. 3. Practice proper control. The concept of power and control are central to seduction and influence. Not having enough control may cause failure on the part of the seducer. Wanting to have too much control, on the other hand, can frighten your subject to the point that they don't want anything to do with you anymore. Since our goal is to establish common ground, you have to give your subject some leverage when it comes to dealing with you in particular. You can accomplish this by being sufficiently open to your subject so that they will be aware of what is truly taking place in the interaction. If you've noticed, the book that you're currently listening to rarely mentions shrouding or hiding details from the subject. The reason for this is that when you start to consciously hide things from another person, all three channels of communication are drastically effective. What we're trying to avoid in this scenario is inadvertently sending the wrong signals to your subject because you're trying your best to hide something from them. Now, you might be wondering, should a seducer reveal their true intentions immediately to the subject? In reality, there's no way to concretely hide one's true intentions. So, my suggestion would be to simply let it out in the open, but you must not make it the centerpiece of the seduction. Unless the technique that you are using calls for delaying the revelation of your central intention, it should stay in the background so that you don't deviate from your original goals. How else can you maximize the effects of having common ground with your subject? Well, here are some additional insights and techniques that will aid you in establishing common ground with your subject. 1. Be completely present. There's a world of difference between being available and being simply physically present. Being physically present is just that. You're there, but there's no assurance that you're actually paying attention to what your subject is saying or expressing to you. In order to become a genuinely influential seducer, you have to cast aside the idea that you must be somehow unreachable because you're concerned with seducing your subject. Expert seducers are known for being highly visible and completely engaged with their subjects. They do this because they know for a fact that when you're completely engaged with your subject, you're bound to make tremendous progress. When your subject is always firmly connected with you and your message, opportunities to resist and disengage are brought down to a minimum. Being available to your subject also prepares you for active listening, which, as you know, is the only technique that you will ever need to successfully elicit feedback from your subject. 2, keep your ears open. A seducer who attempts their best to become an active listener all the time is guaranteed to be miles ahead of the competition. Listening takes time, it takes energy, it takes effort, and to perform it properly, you have to put all these things into it. Believe it or not, many seducers and influencers have a tough time being active listeners because it requires people to minimize responses for the sake of listening and gathering the subject's input. Does this mean that your subject should do all the talking? No. You must also perform your fair share of talking, but at the same time, you must exert every effort to remain silent when your subject is revealing vital details about themselves. To simplify things, think of every interaction as a talk show, in which you're the host and your subject is the guest. Talk shows are a great example of how active listening can be put to good use. Guests do most of the talking, but the host is in charge of guiding the interaction. Every talk show episode has a particular theme, and the host is able to shape the interaction so the guests stick to the theme. What else can be done to push an interaction along? Well, don't forget to ask your subject questions. Be genuinely interested in what your subject has to say and keep them on track by asking a series of questions. Questions will also keep your subject engaged and keep them engaged longer, making it more difficult for them to ignore your other seductive devices. When you're attempting to seduce someone, never give that person time to rethink what's happening at the moment. An effective seducer should be able to sweep the subject off their feet by using continuous streams of seductive devices. The goal is to gain the subject's trust completely before the conversation comes to an end. The goal is that easy and that difficult for first-time seducers. But don't worry, as long as you are conscientious about applying the techniques in this book, you're bound to make plenty of progress in terms of avoiding the common mistakes made by novice seducers and influencers. 3, always be more adaptable than your subject. Adaptability and flexibility are two of the most valuable currencies that you will be able to use as a seducer. The fact of the matter is that there is no fixed trajectory when it comes to seducing another person. Each attempt will be different, and the set of responses that you will observe in each subject will be different. Some subjects will be open to your seductive devices, and you will feel good that you've taken the time to familiarize yourself with the various methods of seduction. And then we have the more challenging situations in which your skills and patience as a seducer and influencer will be clearly tested. For example, your subject may begin showing signs of being completely open to you, and then suddenly the subconscious defenses are awakened and the walls close in again. You may be disheartened when you encounter these instances in your journey to mastering seduction. Don't be, because even the most seasoned practitioners of the art will tell you that every attempt is different and that only one thing separates the winners from the losers, and that's the ability to adapt quickly and intelligently. You can increase your overall ability by paying attention to what your subject is expressing and responding appropriately, by being open to changing your overall strategy and discarding the current one if it simply isn't working. Also by closely studying different linguistic devices so that you will have more options when it comes to shaping your conversation with your subject, and by having a flexible perspective and mindset when it comes to understanding your subject and what they're trying to express or do, and by developing broad vision of the situation so that you're not caught off guard by your subject. Also by practicing seduction with as many people as you can so that the whole process will start to feel more natural and easy to you. And by creating your own seduction toolkit or your unique set of techniques that you know will work because you have special mastery of them. And by simplifying your central intention and message so that there will be no confusion and you will have zero difficulties in conveying what you're really trying to say to your subject. Also by visualizing why your subject is thinking or behaving in a certain way, and by being fully aware of the distance between you and your subject from the beginning of the interaction and all the way to the end, were you able to close the gap between you and your subject? If not, certain changes are in order. Remember, if you're not open to making changes, you're bound to come across the same problems, or challenges as I like to call them, repeatedly. Identify the problem or challenge that is standing in the way of success in terms of your seduction, and address it as quickly as you can. Let no stone remain unturned as you seek solutions to challenges that are standing in your way. Number 17, power of simplicity. Non-practitioners of the art of seduction often think that seduction always has to be extravagantly dressed with flashing lights, loud bangs and shrills and whistles. It doesn't have to be. Seduction, as a function of influence, can have countless appearances depending on what the seducer needs to accomplish. It doesn't have a single predictable form. Also, seduction is often more manageable and effective when it is dressed simply, without unnecessary elements or components. How can you make seductive language and communication more powerful than it already is? Again, simplicity is the name of the game. The more you're able to simplify the structure of your approach, the better off you will be. Here are some essential guidelines that will help you accomplish more as a seducer. 1. Bring down the big words. A truly great seducer must also be an excellent communicator. The best communicators in the world are the ones who can take a massive, complex concept and boil it down to its essential parts so that it can be understood by the majority of individuals. This is an especially useful reminder when you're attempting to socially seduce someone. For example, if you're attempting to create a fantasy for your subject so that they will become lost in powerful and unforgettable mental images, the last thing that you want to hear is a question such as, "Can you repeat that?" When your subject is confused as to what you really wanted to say in the first place, that means you were using words and concepts that were not really appropriate for your subject. Confusion over the true meaning of your words does not signify that you are a superior speaker or that your subject is a lousy listener. It actually signifies that you were lousy in designing the message, so much so that you missed your mark. Seducers can't miss their marks because we rarely get second chances. Remember, you're attempting to seduce someone. Seduction is a covert process that runs underneath the visible vein of regular communication. No one likes the idea of being seduced, so we have to work extra hard to ensure that all the devices we're using to seduce the other person are working quickly and efficiently. You will be hindering your own chances for success if you don't polish your message before interacting with your subject. Sure, you can be adaptive and flexible, but there's adaptive and then there's unprepared. Poor reception of a seducer's message usually means that the seducer was unable to prepare well before they directly engaged the subject. 2. Craft a central message. Unlike regular communication, seductive communication operates on the basis of cues and signals. Seduction is a very indirect method of communicating something to your subject so that they will not be able to resist the central message. Your central message should permeate everything that you say and do to your subject. Don't lose sight of it, even in situations in which your subject's resistance is high and you've barely been able to gain the subject's approval. When planning what you're actually going to say to your subject, here's a good rule to follow. The best beginning gives rise to the best ending of a story. Identify the main idea that will bind your efforts together and use it to polish every other element. Think of your central idea as a grinding stone that will make all of your seductive tools sharper and more effective in what they do. If seduction is a form of performance, then your words form the narrative that breathes life into the performance. A good performance requires a polished script, and you're in charge of preparing the script before you engage your audience, your subject. 3, on vagueness and ambiguity. Many communication experts agree that vagueness has no place in communication. They were wrong. Let me clarify. Seduction is a hybrid of regular communication and influence. There's nothing ordinary about influence because it aims to produce intended outcomes after every conversation. Ambiguity can have a place in your seduction repertoire, but only if you know how to use it well. You see, ambiguity is a special device used in hypnosis to make the subject hallucinate so that they will fall into a trance state. A trance state is a special form of hyperfocus in which the subject's consciousness is redirected so the person will pay close attention to the speaker. How can ambiguity be used for seduction? A little ambiguity in your statements is all you need to trigger hypnosis, which can make your seduction efforts all the more interesting. Here are some examples of vague statements that can help trigger hypnosis or hyperfocus in your subject. What if I tell you that you already know something important that I don't, which makes you 100% better than me? Here's another. How would you like to apply all your learning and be happier in life? Here's another. What you sensed today will help you answer the question I gave you earlier. Just think about it. And here's the analysis. If you have no experience with hypnosis or even the language of influence, the prior examples I shared may be downright confusing to you. And that's exactly why they're so effective, because they're confusing. A strategic, ambiguous statement is one that can completely catch the attention of your subject so that they won't be distracted by other thought currents in their mind. Since ambiguous statements and questions are difficult or impossible to comprehend, the subject's mind begins to hallucinate for an answer, and hypnosis results. Of course, the hypnotic state isn't permanent, so you'll have to work quickly so that you can maximize its effectiveness. Individuals who are in a state of hypnosis are slightly more likely to agree with suggestions than people who aren't hypnotically engaged. This means you still have to be careful with what you say or do after inducing a trance state in your subject. 4, why repetition matters. Repetition may be frowned upon by some communicators, but don't let their bias stop you from utilizing this powerful seduction tool. You see, one of the more challenging tasks of the seducer or influencer is to convince their subject that the whole interaction is agreeable and that everything contained in the interaction is acceptable and good. Often, seducers are faced with the challenge of having to work with only partial agreement. You can solve this conundrum by strategically repeating the central themes associated with your main message. This technique can be used to boost the effectiveness of prior techniques that make use of thematic devices to create imagery and fantasies for the subject. However, you must avoid mechanical repetition of words and concepts if you want to get good results. Repetition should be done discreetly or subtly, and the subject should only have a vague idea that something sounds familiar, but they shouldn't be able to put a finger on what was repeated. I know that this definitely sounds like a big challenge to you, especially if you've never tried to systematically seduce someone. This is where practice comes to the rescue. After learning a new concept, you have to be willing to practice, and practice some more before heading out to the field to use your newly developed skills. 5, short cues and clues work. This is connected with the concept of using ambiguity to make the subject hallucinate, to fill in the missing details. At certain intervals during the conversation, you can suddenly change your verbal tact so that your responses will become more or less concise than before. This sudden change in how you respond and or communicate with your subject will have a twofold effect. The first effect is shock. Your subject will be caught off guard because you've suddenly winded down your verbiage and they don't exactly know why you've toned it down. Being surprised rejuvenates the interaction and makes the subject even more fascinated with you and your message. The second effect is, again, induced hallucination. Because your responses are now shorter than before, your subject's mind will begin racing to add the missing pieces to the puzzle. The mind doesn't like it when it's unable to understand something completely. So when pieces of the puzzle are missing or they don't fit right, expect the mind to automatically seek answers that will solve the puzzle. Using short cues and clues will enable you to engage your subject in such a way that you will be able to keep your distance and, at the same time, increase the subject's overall engagement in the conversation. This technique is especially effective in situations in which you have to seduce someone who doesn't know you very well. Essentially, we're triggering the autopilot response of the brain, which allows the seduction to progress even without continuous intervention of the seducer. When the subject becomes more trusting and open to you, you can continue using this technique, or you can choose to revert to less ambiguous approaches to make the seduction easier to carry out. But there's a caveat. Using ambiguity to seduce someone is like using an advanced form of weaponry with shiny levers and buttons. If you're not sure what you want to do, or if you're not certain how to use ambiguity, you may end up pressing the wrong button, and something may also end up accidentally imploding. Misinterpretation is a big challenge in seduction, and the absolute worst thing that can happen is to be rejected because you seem like a suspicious individual. Does the length of the conversation matter? Yes. Generally speaking, individuals can only pay attention to someone for a few minutes before their attention begins to waver. The averages differ from study to study, but it appears that the human mind can only focus for a maximum of 15 minutes before it starts to daydream or focus on something else. Of course, professionals like artists, writers, and photographers have a much higher degree of concentration because of the nature of their work. Professionals can focus for hours because they're able to self-induce hyperfocus for the purpose of increasing their effectiveness at work. Does this mean that you have to limit your conversation to just 15 minutes? Again, the answer is no. However, if you have to plan the conversation ahead of time, you can dedicate enough time for each segment or phase. This is especially useful as a guideline for seducers who will be applying the seduction formulas that I've shared in the earlier part of this book. Each general formula has at least three phases, and it would be best if you can enact each phase whenever you interact with your intended subject or audience. What should be done if you only have a few short minutes to speak to your subject? If for some reason you are unable to speak to your subject for long stretches of time, you have to be extra selective about what you say. The new goal is to say things that your subject will not be able to forget. Memorable lines that are short, sweet, and thought-provoking should be used. Forget about the longer formulas if you will only have a few minutes to talk to your subject. Reverse the patterns and formulas for longer conversations. Here are some tips to make the most of short meetings. Ask a profound question. State the obvious and add a twist to it. Restate something memorable that you've said in the past and make sure that your subject remembers it. Use humor. Tell your subject a joke. Any joke will do, even the not-so-funny ones. Promise that you'll share something very important the next time you meet. Ideally, your short yet memorable message to your subject should make your subject want to see you again because time was too short and your subject wants to see or hear more of you. If you play your cards right, you can inspire desire in your subject, even if you don't have a lot of time in your hands. Number 18, storytelling and the human experience. Nothing is more seductive than hearing an authoritative person tell a good story. Storytelling is an unbreakable cultural artifact that has allowed humankind as a whole to preserve its history and culture. The collective human experience wouldn't be the same if we didn't know all the stories to tell. The same goes for influence and seduction. The foundational art of influence wouldn't exist without narratives, because influence is a form of narrative with a special aim. Seducers can further cement their power over their subjects through storytelling. Storytelling is relatively easy to accomplish, and it's one of the best ways to engage a single subject or a whole auditorium of listeners. There are countless ways to tell an engaging story to your subject. Here are some of the ways that you can craft the best stories to seduce your subject, so that they would believe in your identity and accept your central intention. 1. Create a hero to root for. In the context of the seductive story, the hero is always the speaker himself or herself. Your stories must be bold and courageous, with a hint of rebelliousness and danger. Every section of your story is an invitation to your subject to come a little closer and to listen a little more intently to what you have to say. The hero of the seductive story is a reflection of your most attractive attributes as a person, stated indirectly so that your subject will find them more acceptable and believable. If you tell your subject that you are a bold individual, they might not believe it. But if you tell your subject how you braved a snowstorm in the middle of the night, your subject will most likely conclude that you are one of the boldest and most courageous individuals around. 2. Derive interest from feedback. Normally, we tell stories to gain pleasure from the act of sharing our experiences. The paradigm is slightly different when you're telling a story with the specific intent to seduce another person. Your storytelling efforts must bring your subject pleasure and enjoyment, not the other way around. Your first order of priority would be to make sure that your subject is very engaged and interested in your story. Again, you can measure your subject's engagement in your storytelling by observing the three channels of communication: verbal, nonverbal, and vocal. Essentially, any changes detected in any of these three channels is a sign that your subject is fully engaged in your story. However, if there is no change in your subject, or they begin showing signs of wavering from your story, you have to change tact and keep your subject connected with you. What if you run out of personal stories? The stories that you tell your subject can come from any source, as long as the story that you wish to tell is aligned with your subject's interests and desire. Given that, it can be used as raw material for seduction. However, you must not tell stories just for the sake of sharing narratives. Each narrative should prove a point or impart a vital lesson to your subject. Otherwise, the story would simply consume vital time, which you could have spent on a seductive device that would help you accomplish your central aim in seducing the subject in the first place. If you're having trouble figuring out if your subject would be interested in your story, use these guide questions. Is my story relevant to the subject's central desire or interest? Does my story have a powerful central theme that binds together all the twists and turns? Does my story keep my subject guessing as to what will happen next? Does my story engage the subject from the very beginning? Does my subject connect to my story because of possible similar experiences? Can my subject support or root for the hero in my story? Can my subject derive value from my story and take home important lessons or insights that they can apply to their own lives? Can my story invoke emotions and vivid imagery in the subject's mind? These are the basic parameters of a good story. If you can share your story using these guideposts, you can be sure that your story will be ideal for the seduction process. If not, you may have to boost your efforts with other strategies. 3. Familiarity and common ground. Remember our lesson on establishing common ground? We discussed that if you want to make a good impression on someone, you have to show them that you are in the same arena as them, the same page as them, and you're essentially two birds of a feather. What this means is that as a seducer, you're going to be your subject's biggest fan and supporter. Your alignment with your subject can be expressed clearly through the stories that you choose to share with them. At this juncture, you will really begin to see how important it is to know your subject well, because if you have little familiarity with your subject, you're not going to be able to predict how well they're going to react to your stories. It would be best to approach the situation the way hypnotherapists do it. Hypnotherapists don't just devise hypnosis sessions off the bat. They make it a point to know their clients well, and they do this through interviews and by engaging their clients in a dynamic conversation. Of course, the goal of the hypnotherapist is to understand their client's motivations and the possible reasons why they need hypnotherapy in the first place. When the hypnotherapist has sufficient information, that would be the time that they will begin designing the appropriate scripts that will enable the client to overcome their current set of challenges. The seducer would also do well in taking a page from the book of the hypnotherapist. Rather than jumping into the fray thinking that your plan will work simply because you think it will, you need to have adequate preparation, and you need sufficient information about your subject before you even attempt seducing them. The power of the narrative cannot be underemphasized. And as a seducer, you will find yourself constantly telling your subject's stories to amaze, please, and impress them. Here are some additional guidelines that you can use immediately to create engaging stories for use in seduction. 1. Desire and needs. After familiarizing yourself with your subject's deepest desires, needs, and urges, the next step is to integrate this information to your overall narrative. Ask yourself, what kind of story would appeal to the subject given the fact that they have this particular desire? How would you project yourself as a hero in the story and make it relevant to what your subject wants to have or experience? For example, if you want to be romantically involved with someone and that person has revealed to you that they are afraid of commitment or intimacy because of their experiences of being abandoned in the past, you certainly have to take that information into consideration before picking and sharing a story. The appropriateness of your story is hinged on what you think your subject needs. Using the same example, what do you think would be the reaction of your subject if you tell them that you've never fully committed in romantic relationships because you're afraid of being smothered? A first glance at this situation would reveal that you're going to have a tough time convincing your subject that you are an ideal partner because the message of your story communicates the theme of abandonment, which is directly the opposite of what your subject obviously wants or needs in a relationship. 2. Make it unique. So you have the right theme, you have foreknowledge of your subject, and you have the desire to impress. There's one other element left to fill, that's uniqueness. Your story has to be unique so it will be memorable to your subject, and the central message of the story will remain with them even after you're no longer around. Like I said, seduction is a form of influence. Influence is the highest form of personal persuasion because it leaves a mark in the mind of the subject. So much so that the subject continues thinking and acting upon the influencer's messages even if they are no longer around. Now, the uniqueness of your story will be dependent on how you shape the general arc or flow of events. Make it a point to sprinkle your story with excitement and a little uncertainty so that your subject will constantly hallucinate as to what would take place next. 3. Make your subject laugh. Laughter is the universal sign of relief and positivity, and even primates share this peculiar trait with the human species. Whenever possible, use humor to keep your subject engaged and interested in what the hero of the story will be doing next. If you use humor properly, your subject will have a very positive experience while talking to you, and they will want to meet with you again, if only to listen to your great stories. Making your subject laugh is a strategic move if you want them to keep coming back for more. 4. Shock factor. The shock factor of a story, like humor, can make it more interesting. However, people tend to overdo the use of shock factors simply because they want to impress their audience. The danger of overusing the shock factor is that your subject may no longer see you as a competent informant or someone who deals with believable facts. Unless you've already established yourself well within the known social circles of your subject's perception of you and their valuation of their relationship with you can change instantly if you're seen as an unreliable informant. Use the shock factor only if you're dealing with something that really occurred, or at least if you're going to embellish your story, do it in a way that even you would believe your story if you were to hear it for the first time. 5. Strange and fascinating language. After a period of time, your subject may become bored with listening to your story. Avoid the scenario by changing how you relate the details verbally to your subject. Use memorable phrases and sentences to re-engage your subject's faltering interest. Take your main idea and think of a way to retell it in such a way that it sounds new and fresh. Here are some examples. Nothing warms you up in the cold of the night like a warm embrace. And I felt afraid, but her face was like a burning fire that pushed me to keep fighting. And I left our old city 15 years ago. I've been without a heart for about the same time. And if I had to give up, I'd give up when my last breath is gone. And I've always stuck to my old ways, and my old ways have saved me more than once. And here's the analysis. The basic formula for the strange and fascinating language is simple. You simply take the main message that you want to convey and you use unusual imagery to make it easier for the subject to understand the emotions that you want to express. Leaving tiny gaps in the story will also make your subject even more fascinated with your story, for the simple reason that you're leaving small areas open for conjecture and assumptions. Strange language can be used for cliffhangers or sections in the story where the subject would have absolutely no idea what would happen next. Now I'd like you to join me in the next module. I'm Dr. Steve G. Jones, hoping you have an outstanding day.